I'm Rob.
I'm E.
It's your man underscore low, aka L-O-J-I-I, low.
Looking like a movie, but my life is bigger than a flick. Bigger than the Instagram, bigger than a Twitch. Bigger than a theater or museum exhibits. Just a little abstract, but you can get the picture. I'm still that same young boy who wanted to get rich. Compliment the custom starter jacket with the kicks. Fly to an island, gold on my neck and wrist. Built different, real sturdy, reminiscent of them bricks. I'm just holding on till I get a better grip. Words from my aunt Janet, in my heart she still lives. Standing on the planet, fly like the mothership. The gods must have sent me down here on a mission. Had to change channels, I watched my dog switch. Hit me like them customized nines, I was triggered. Thought you was my brother, but you want some other shit. I had to hit the corner, had to go and bust a bitch. Spin the block, you know I had to get my lick back. I'd rather eat in peace, I'd rather get this bread. I'd rather brush the dirt off and get it off my head. Dig it deep in the game, blood, spirit, and flesh.
Welcome to the next movement, folks. Low G, thank you for your time. I understand you've had a hectic day. Appreciate you being here.
I'm ready. I love it, man. This is dope. We talking about stuff I like, and we talking about me. So, you know what I'm saying? Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. We had the pleasure of seeing you live a couple weeks ago now, I guess it was, and had an opportunity to speak with you then, so glad we can catch up some more. There were a couple things that Alexander Spitt mentioned to us when we spoke to him briefly about the album, about Starter Pack, the new project you have right now. I guess I should mention that.
Oh, that's what I got to catch up with Spitt?
Yeah, briefly. We had a brief conversation with him.
Yeah.
One of the things he said that I wanted to like follow up with you about is he mentioned that y'all have been sitting on the songs on Starter Pack for a minute, and it made me wonder what has contributed to the timing of this project.
Oh yeah. Wow, it has been a minute now that you mention it. Nothing was on purpose, actually. You know, I think everything came out naturally when it was able to come together in the way it needed to come together. But yeah, the breadth of the songs that are on, a large majority of the songs that are on Starter Pack, they all came from 2 days of studio sessions that happened in the summer of 2021 and then 2022. Mm. Actually, what ended up on this project that just came out, those are actually only the songs that came from the 2022 sessions.
Okay.
So actually, yeah, the majority of those songs came from one day, one studio session. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. We was in I was on a trip to LA for some work, and we had been linked up and talking for about I want to say like a year, maybe 2 years officially at that point. And we had been meaning to get in the studio together, and Spit actually has a studio in the basement of the Hundreds HQ. And, you know, he has a lot of people go through there, and he's got a whole entire like world in there. It's actually, when you step in there, it's like stepping back into the 90s for real. Like you really feel like you in one of them old school studios that might've contributed to an album like the one we're going to talk about today. As far as Method Man goes, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking, you step in, it's old TVs, VHS players, a collection of VHS tapes. He's digital, but he's still very analog with his flow, you know? So, you know, a lot of turntables and the computer setup is there, but you know, he keeps it real analog, a collection of records, the turntables, you know, the connections he needs to be able to rip vinyl onto the digital platform and then, you know, manipulate it the way he wants to. And, you know, it's like stepping into a whole world. And it was just the right energy, man. And we had been meaning to connect. So we just started cooking up. And then, you know, I called some of my guys up, just let them know I was at the stool. And luckily they was free. And they had some free time. They wanted to come fuck with the kid, and they just pulled up to the studio, and then the rest is history.
It's interesting that you described the studio as this like throwback experience, like the 90s vibe that you're talking about, because you're doing a lot of looking back on this project, on Starter Pack. You like looking at old relationships and past struggles in the game, past trends and fashion, like starter jackets, of course. And I was going to ask, like, what provoked all that reflection? And it sounds like maybe the environment had something to do with it.
I think I'm on that type of time anyway. And the environment just welcomed that energy out of me in a perfect way. It just gave me the perfect, you know, hyperbolic time chamber to just be myself and let things flow naturally. And I think that's why the songs came out so naturally and so organically. Mm. And me and Spitz's relationship has developed and got real close, like a brotherhood, that naturally too, just because we on the same type of time, around the same age, you know, just creeping up on our mid 30s. And, you know, we real 90s kids. We grew up like in that era. Like, you know, we ain't capping, like we really from that era. And I think just as much as I'm looking back, you know, I'm looking forward. You know, I've always been a futuristic kid. As much as I'm from that era before the internet really took over, I only had about like, I'll give it half my life where I was just straight analog. You know, it wasn't really no heavy internet use like that. I probably got real heavy into the internet probably around 15. You know what I'm saying? We didn't really have like a bunch of crazy computers in the crib like that. You know, we was working class family. Like, we had like one busted ass Dell that we had to share. That shit was on dial up when I first got on the internet and all that. So I wasn't even allowed to be on the internet like that because it hogged up the phone line. You know what I'm saying? If I was on the internet, nobody could call the crib. So,
yes,
you know, I wasn't even allowed to be on that shit like that. So, you know, I think just in essence, there's a part of me that ain't going nowhere just because half of my life was just, I'm just an analog kid, you know? But by the time I was like young teens, mid-teens, you know, I was ready to step into a whole new world and be a part of the future. That shit always excited me, you know?
Yeah.
So just as much as jumping to Starter Pack, just as much as I'm kind of reflecting on where I came from, I'm kind of speaking on how I've just been in this shit for that long. Like, that's where I come from. But pun intended, I'm just getting started because my mind is on the future. So I'm just trying to like take where I'm from and bring that into a future that, you know, benefits me and mine.
As Rob has mentioned, and as you are mentioning, Starter Pack is a project that channels many different things. But generally speaking, it feels like a motivational toolkit for other creatives who need encouragement to keep pressing on or to start living out their dreams. Was it a conscious decision to make this part of the theme? And if so, did you feel obligated to do this as a way to pay it forward to other artists because of your own history?
Yes. Like I just mentioned before, yeah, I've been doing this music thing for a long time. You know, I came up around a bunch of musicians and getting to witness live music and just people just exploring their creativity, even if it wasn't their main gig in life. Shout out to my pops and my uncles and all them. So to me, this journey with music, it's been a long journey. You know what I'm saying? And then when you've been in this for as long as I've been in it, you know, you may not be globally known or worldwide famous or something, you know what I mean? The American tradition is to like start sleeping on yourself. You know what I'm saying? You like, oh, well, I ain't rich off this shit, so maybe I'm not that good, or maybe I ain't doing something right, or maybe this ain't for me. I think I just wanted to tap into that energy where I'm like, yo, even if you doing this forever and been doing this forever, every day is a new day.
Hmm.
Really get it started. And that moment that you might be looking for, whether that's for fame, whether that's for riches, or maybe it's just to, you know, have your passion be shared with a larger world than you used to. That could be any day. So don't give up, because that day could be any single day that you alive. You know what I'm saying? So I just wanted to get that message across for sure. And that's pretty much the meaning behind Starter Pack. I mean, basically saying, like, I'm from that era where, you know, we was rocking starter jackets, and, you know, just a starter jacket could be worth your life. You know what I'm saying? But now here I am in 2023, and, you know, I just got my Spotify rap. It said I had like 1.2 million new listeners just this past year. So over 1 million people, I'm a new artist. You know what I'm saying? But I've been doing this shit since, you know what I'm saying, back in the day. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I've been here forever, but I'm just getting started still. That's really the whole point of the whole joint. So it's like, no matter how long you've been in this, every day is a new day to begin.
Yeah, it sort of speaks to the idea that your story, whether or not you think so, can be inspiring to so many people. It's a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to just be yourself, be organic, be true to your story, be true to your passion, and not give up on that, because you never know who is inspiring. You never know who you're giving motivation to.
Yeah. Message.
And messages from strangers like every day on the internet telling me like, yo, you really helping me through a hard time. You changed the way I write. You know, young kids hit me up talking about like, yo, you are like completely influencing the way I like approach rap and like think about being creative. And that's priceless. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's beyond what I even imagined jumping into this music stuff. You know, it was just a passion. It was therapy. So like hearing that type of stuff is just what keeps me going, like in a deep way. And music was always my soundtrack to my life. You know, music in a lot of ways helped raise me, taught me a lot of things, always kept me dreaming, kept me hopeful about the future, or just gave me hope in a very dark space, or at least some therapy in a very dark space. So I always hoped at the very least my music could do that for other people, you know?
Yeah, sounds like it has.
Shit, bless up if it has. Anybody who out there listening, thank you. You know, I'm grateful every day for that.
Mm. So on this new EP, you're doing a lot of examining. You're examining different relationships. You're analyzing the ones that you have with loved ones, with your community, with supporters of your artistry, and also relationship that you have with yourself. How did these connections impact the project's direction and your trajectory as an artist? And when you think about the project and when it was finished, did you look at the relationships that you have with these people and yourself differently?
Let's go to the first part of the question. I'm going to do my best to just keep a G in this interview. I wasn't really thinking about that for real. I was more just reflecting on how far I've come pursuing my passion. And no matter what, if you just in the world and you outside and you trying to do something like music and like entertain people, you gonna have to just be, for the most part, involved and outside and like parts of communities. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless you just a bedroom artist and you just want to just record stuff and just drop it on the internet and stay to yourself, like people do that. You know what I'm saying? That's, I fully respect that. But like, if you want to be outside and be a performer artist, you just going to have to be in the world, you know? And even before music was like a thing, I looked at it as something to pursue as a lifestyle or like a career. I was just the type of kid, I was outside, you know? You had to be outside. I said that in the beginning of the track, Away Game. You know, it wasn't no cell phones. Like, I literally had to, if I wanted to hang out with somebody, I had to go knock on their door and like ask their parents or ask them if they could come outside. You know what I'm saying? And kick it. So there's just been a lot of interaction in my life, period, just from being outside. You know what I'm saying? And looking for stuff to do or looking for stuff to pursue. I was just reflecting on all that. I think inherently there's just been a lot of growth and a lot of changes and a lot of ins and outs with people I've had to go through and endure and process naturally just from the journey, just from my life and how I live So I think this project was more like just telling the tales of like a kid who was outside and just like a hustler. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you're going to have ins and out with love interests. You're going to have ins and out with collaborators. You're going to have ins and out with your folks, your family. You're going to have ins and out with people who believe in you or may not believe in you, or people who change their mind about you or anything. So I was just trying to paint the picture of somebody who just been outside pursuing something and just been involved with a lot of different people along the way. And just trying to make a soundtrack for somebody who can relate to that type of journey.
Mm.
And yeah, I might have answered the second part of the question just in that first part. But yeah, just inherently, like, I've been through tons of changes. You know what I'm saying? I can't even begin on that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That'll be a whole 10-hour podcast right there.
You can definitely hear it in this EP for sure.
Sure.
Hey, and that's beautiful. You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad it's hitting the way I hoped it would.
The title track on Starter Pack is what really sets the tone for me, particularly because of the production. It has this 90s like R&B sample in it, which makes the track feel so nostalgic. And nostalgia is one of the common themes on Starter Pack, a longing for what sometimes seems to be described as a simpler time, and also one that has deeply resonated with you and possibly shaped you into the person you are today. In working with Alexander Spitt on this project, how important was it for you that the production complement the memories and experiences you were reflecting on?
Mm. I think a blessing was that me and Spitt just on the same wavelength, yo. Like, I didn't even have to worry about that. Like, just the beats he was showing me and sending me through just automatically put me in that zone, because that's the type of time he on too, without trying. It was just very organic. A funny story behind the title is that beat of the first track that's called Starter Pack, that's what he called it himself, like, before ever sending it to me. So it was already named Starter Pack when I got it. Mm. And I think after I wrote the rhymes, the rest of the ideas just flowed out. I was like, oh, yeah. The whole concept just came out. I was like, yeah, Starter Pack. I was like, this is perfect. Like, you know, and it came during a time where I was kind of having a bit of a lull in creativity. Like, it was a few months of me not really writing as much, just me outside just living, soaking stuff in. And I think when I got in the studio with him, I just felt inspired. And a lot of stuff just came flowing out. So it was kind of like, you know, me getting started back up in that way as well. And then the rest of the conceptual things that came out after that just happened naturally. I was like, yeah, you know, this got me started back up because he's on my type of time, just the type of samples and the type of sounds I love, you know, that real nostalgic R&B and soul stuff. You know, that's a regular part of my repertoire for sure. That's not my only repertoire. For any producers out there listening, you ain't only got to send me soul samples and R&B samples, but you know, me and Spit, we really from that era where that's just a natural part of us. So it just inspired me in that way. And everything was just able to come together organically.
Mm. When we talked to Alexander Spitt, he asked us if we had a favorite track on the project, and we both pretty quickly were like, The Rotation.
Life is disco, key dance, head on stuff, shot me out, 1-2 count. Foot on my neck, peeking doors, then seen it all. Ain't no curtain, it's lit. Stage fall, tall, tear, pair of hair, all on my neck. Find back the tears, falling paralyzed, these stairs. Hard to lay back, dogs back to back. Project Roach, hard to kill. All those slacks, smile, hit it here, we here, niggas still. Blessed. In the chaos, with shutting gloss and lids at the playoffs. Niggas ballin', tryna buy respect. It's a playoff, it's a payoff. How niggas don't know cause effect. Gotta chill out, it's all love when I touch down. It's a seance, just a vessel when I touch down. Still just a man, tryna figure out. Keep your head on. Life a disco king, 1-2 count.
Fucking up the rotation and let the world spin. just let the world spin.
And he told us a sort of funny story about Pink Sifu's involvement.
Yeah, that's a good story. That's funny. You know, like how I mentioned before, once I was already in the stool, I called a few of my guys up, you know, just my regular crew of people who I kick it with anyway. You know, me and Pink Sifu in particular, we've been locked in since, yeah, about a decade now. We met back in like 2013. We met on the train, actually.
That's wild.
No music involved at all. Like, you know, we was just two random people, not from LA, who was in LA, just pursuing musical endeavors. And I was living in Long Beach at the time. I was actually on the Blue Line. Anybody who lived in LA or definitely the city, Long Beach, you know what I'm talking about, the Blue Line. I was a, you know, low income artist kid. I didn't even have a car out there. I was literally like, you know, on the train. I was riding public transportation out there, like doing whatever I could to get in the studio and just make music. Cause I came from the East Coast where I didn't even need a car. So I just, when I moved out there, I didn't even have a car. You know what I'm saying? So I was on the train. I had a job at the time. I was actually on break from that job and riding the train to go get some food before I had to go clock back in. And he stepped on the train. He ended up sitting right across from me. He was just a random stranger. He sat across from me. And I had this like Basquiat t-shirt on. And it was just one of them moments where it's like you can tell somebody kind of on the same type of time as you, or same type of vibe. So we was just sitting across from each other, caught each other's eye, and then we was just kind of like looking at each other, you know, peeping each other's steez out. And then he ended up leaning forward and being like, "Yo, bro, I really fuck with that t-shirt." And he reached out for a dap. And so I dapped him back. And, you know, we just striked up a casual conversation. And he was like, "Are you an artist?" And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "You got to be an artist too." Just from his whole vibe, you know, he came in looking like Black John Lennon. So I was like, "You got to be an artist." And he was like, "Yeah, I make music and all that." And I was like, "Yeah, that's what I do. And some other things." And the rest is history. And he actually wasn't even living. He wasn't even living in LA at the time. He was still based in Ohio, where he from. Actually, he originally from Birmingham, Alabama, but he grew up mostly in Ohio. He was out from Ohio working with some people he knew from the internet and just, you know, exploring LA, trying to get some music in. And he was like, "Yo, I'm thinking about moving out here. If I move out here, we should lock in. I'm gonna keep in touch with you." So we pretty much did that. And then he ended up moving to LA maybe like 6 months later. And then we just locked in, man. We was like every day with it for years, you know. Like, you know, there was even moments where we was just living together type shit. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know what I'm saying? Like sharing the EBT and sleeping on floors, just being like-minded, struggling artists trying to, you know, put all our resources into making music and making the dream happen. And we kind of kept the forever connection based off like all them years. I eventually left LA, moved back to the East Coast. He was in LA for a while and, you know, kept doing his thing. Obviously that shit worked for him. You know what I'm saying? My man out here doing it big. I'm proud every day. It inspires me every day. But we just been locked in forever off that. You know, I'm just trying to get a little backstory as to the connection. And that's part of my regular family. So, you know, him and also the other people on the EP, that's just regular people's people who I made like real strong connections with during my journey. And we just be locked in. So, you know, they was just one call away. I was like, "Yo, I got a stool right now. I'm in the stool. I'm with Alexander Spit. Like, come cook up." And they was all free. They pulled up. And one thing that's notorious about Sifu, anybody who worked with him behind the scenes, you know the vibe. Anybody who know him in real life, you already know. My man's be on no type of schedule with the creativity. Like, he's working at all hours. odd hours of the day, odd hours of the night. So very often he'll pull up somewhere and just randomly fall asleep. Like, you know what I'm saying? Cause it'll just, it's just like at a certain point, he just run out of gas and he gotta get a quick nap in, and then he just be back on it. You know what I'm saying? There's really no set schedule with that man. So it was one of them moments. He pulled up to the stool. I think me and a couple of the other homies, we was already working on some. So he was just vibing for a little bit, smoked some, and then he just crashed, you know, which is, we used to that. Like, all right, this nigga, he pulled up and just fell asleep. Like, typical seafood type time, you know what I'm saying? Let him get his nap in. And right when this one beat came on, it was the beat for the rotation. And me and Spit was playing that. I was already catching the vibe. Just out of nowhere, this man just wake up. Like, he out of a, he came out. Oh, it was like he was possessed. You know what I'm saying? He just like came up. As soon as he, his eyes not even fully open yet, he just rising up. He's shaking his head, nodding to the beat. He's like, yo, yo, what's this? And then Spit's like, oh, all right, yeah, you want to get on this one? He like, yeah, let me do that. You know what I'm saying? And then he literally just wrote his verse in like 15 minutes after that. Like, I'm not even lying. And that's kind of how he is too. Like, that man just be writing verses like in 10, 15 minutes. Like, he's a crazy kind of stream of consciousness poet almost. You know, that's the way he approaches things. So, you know, it was just one of them moments. He just heard that. He woke up to it. And in 15 minutes, he had something ready, laid it down. And then, yeah, I just came in after and did my thing, closed it out. But that was definitely a funny story. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just, that man was dead asleep. You know what I'm saying? And just woke up out of the deep trenches of dream world and just came through and just blessed that. And then came with that beautiful verse. Like, make that shit up.
That's great. I love that. I think it might also like speak to, I don't know, the quality or the power of that beat, which I want to talk about in a minute, but just an incredible beat.
Yo, I agree. And he did that joint straight off vinyl. Like, that joint came straight off. He was just, I even want to say maybe reversing it, like reversing whatever record he was sampling. I don't even know what record he was sampling. Like, don't even ask me.
Yeah.
But like, he was just ripping stuff off vinyl. Spit does that. Like, you know, he might catch a vibe and just start playing instruments and come up with something from scratch. But he also has a very dope record collection and very good taste. You know, sometimes he'll just start thumbing through records and see what's happening, you know, see what's happening, see what happens. And that was one of those moments. Like, he just picked a record. I wasn't even paying attention. I was too smoked out. I was, you know, we was blowing it down in there. And, you know, we had like the VHS movies on. It was all types of stuff going on. So I was kind of distracted. So I was just letting him do his thing, hearing what's going on in the background. And, but I remember when he started messing with that. He had just picked up a vinyl and just put it on the table, started manipulating it. And that's what it was, you know, just alchemy straight up.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the story of how you two found each other, and I can kind of see it clear as day. It just, you know, really speaks to this energy that you both carry. I mean, I obviously don't know you both very well, but just through your music, there's just this magic there. So I could just see you two clicking. I mean, Sifu is obviously somebody that's really impacted you. I wondered I wonder if he is someone, because of this close relationship, that you often go to whenever you're working on a particular project, just as like a consult. Like, do you ask him for his advice and opinion on your work?
Definitely, yeah. But it's more so just kind of natural. Like, even if I wasn't making music for 5 years straight, we'd be talking. Just tapping in, you know, so showing each other stuff is natural. That is one funny thing we both talked about before, you know, is just that, like, we don't have that many songs out together, but we've been making music together for longer than most people we know in this game. Yeah. And that's just kind of funny. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll finally come out with something like bigger and like full length official tissue one day, but it's going to happen naturally. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just my man's 100 grand regardless, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
We'll be ready for that low Sifu project when the time comes.
Oh yeah. Sure. Whenever that comes, it's going to be magic for sure. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like I said, the beat on Rotation is sublime. It just has this meditative quality to it that I just love. It's beautiful. And you're rhyming essentially about like protecting the protecting your peace. Just let the world spin. Yeah. How much did the beat inspire your writing?
Oh, 100%. I felt like I was just on a carousel or something, like just merry-go-round when I was hearing that beat. I'm like, yeah, the world's spinning around me. That's how life felt in that moment. A lot was going on. I mean, shit, a lot always going on this planet. You know what I'm saying? And it's always spinning. So, you know, I was just trying to tap into that mood. You know, just we can't have control of everything, yo. You know what I mean? Just sometimes you really just got to let the world spin and see what you can do with that.
As we've been talking, doing a lot of reflecting, looking back, referencing things from the past, a lot of the things that you talk about, you seem to have a certain like reverence for. I'm thinking specifically about a track you mentioned previously, Away Game. As you said, you having to like walk around and knock on people's doors, no cell phones, an affinity for the fashion at the time. On the track, you say, just getting back to my ways, just getting back on the page, feeling like I'm stuck in my ways.
Yeah.
Which made it sound like it could be challenging at times to kind of move on from things. And I just kind of wondered if writing about these things from the past has helped you move on in a sense.
Definitely. You know, shout out Badu. It's like, say I'm an analog girl in a digital world. That's how I feel. Analog bull in the digital world. You know what I'm saying? Like, anybody who close to me, the jokes is very often, you know, just me being some old head. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a young old head. Just a lot of my mannerisms and just the way I dress and I talk and all that, you know, is definitely still from that era. I think the dressing and all that, that's just, man, I don't know, yo. Ain't nothing was flyer than what I was seeing in them 90s videos and just the style and the fits people was getting off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it ain't need no updates for me. I was like, you know, a lot of the clothes I rock still, it's like stuff I've had for years. You know what I'm saying? We was buying them big and baggy anyway, so they still fit, you know, and then anything that didn't fit, I just tried to replace it, but still collecting brands. I'm definitely from that era of the internet where, you know, it was just part of them kids who was like outside and around before the internet and trying to archive and keep some of the traditions and the fashion styles alive and document them for the younger people who may not have been there. I'm definitely from that cloth. So, you know, in many ways, yeah, I'm stuck in my ways on that vibe, and I'm happy to be stuck. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm chilling. Like, I don't really feel like it need to be updated. And that don't mean I'm not afraid to explore no new styles, but I'm just like, you know, that's what I like. You know what I'm saying? That's what I think is jiggy. I think, like, you know, trends move so fast nowadays. Ain't nothing wrong with, like, keeping certain styles alive and keeping certain traditions alive out of just, like, honor. You know what I mean? So I definitely try to come with that energy, especially for the 90s and the early 2000s. As far as, like, lifestyle-wise and mind state-wise and maybe, like, trauma that I picked up from them times, like, yeah, the music is what helps me, you know, feel hopeful, move past it, get some therapeutic things going on, and just grow.
Yeah, everything you're talking about and my ability to relate to what you're saying is one of the things I appreciate most about Starter Pack.
Love.
Yeah, especially the 90s aspect of it, right? I'm also from the time you're speaking of. So starter jackets, Hispay, spending time outside with people and actually interacting with them in person versus connecting online. It really was a time. Yeah, it really was a time. And I think growing up in that era made me who I am as a person today. I'm wondering what it's done for you. And maybe you've already answered this, but when you think about your journey over the years, do you think growing up during this time is what helps establish the foundation of your artistry?
For sure. 100%. You know, but that's also what makes me kind of so easily able to adapt to where we at right now, because, you know, if you remember the late 90s and the early 2000s, like the new millennium, like everything was about the future. You know what I'm saying? Like all that cyberpunk stuff, you know, all the post-apocalyptic imagery and movies and sounds we was getting, you know, that stuff deeply inspired me. So as much as I want to carry on tradition and keep it alive and honor it, there's also like the part of me that was influenced by being a youngin in that era and being so enticed by the future. You know, as much as I want to preserve some of that imagery and some of that sound, like I also want to bring it into the future. You know, that's part of honoring it and carrying the tradition, is like you don't keep it stuck. You help it grow and develop and keep going into the new generation.
Yeah, I love that. I think people that grew up during that time can straddle both of those lines. Like you can go back to the past and really reminisce, but you are also ready to move forward.
Exactly. I think some of my peoples from my era do that the best, honestly. Yeah. Like some of my peers and people I meet who just from that same era, you know, we're equally as obsessed with the future as we are with the past. It's like a special kind of a perspective we got to have, because we're kind of that last era of kids who got some time growing up before the internet took over, and then we was also there at the beginning of the internet really taking over. So that's a very interesting perspective, and you know, I just hope to carry that on like in a interesting way, you know.
Yeah, for sure. When Starter Pack dropped, you performed the entire EP at Silk City,
best I could, you know what I'm saying. That was like my first time ever doing it live. It was like half of a listening session, so you know, it was definitely you know, just us first experimenting with how this would sound live, and I even took pointers from that about how I want to do it better going forward. But I hope everybody enjoyed it. You know what I'm saying? We had a good time. Shout out Silk City, they made that shit sound nice. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, that was cool. That was real dope. Shout out to y'all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Bless. Like it was lovely to connect with you, but yeah, I mean, we obviously had a good time. Like it was amazing. And I wonder, maybe you already answered this, but I wondered if, cause this was all new material. I mean, people really hadn't got a chance to sit with this. Like they might've heard it a little bit that day, or they didn't get to listen to it at all. So did performing that new material in front of a crowd make you feel vulnerable in any way, or was it liberating?
Both. I mean, performing in front of a crowd is always vulnerable. You know what I mean? You just in a fishbowl. You know what I mean? Like you're there to entertain, and people have paid their good money to come be entertained. So they kind of like, it's already like, all right, what you about to do, bro? You know what I mean? Like, what you about to do with my money? Is you going to give me a good time, or did I waste my time? So there's always that vulnerable position. Like you really hope you like, you know, expressing the music live in a way that like lets people enjoy it to the same capacity or as much in a different capacity to the recordings. And or you're trying to be good enough that you're coaxing people in to even go listen to the recordings. You know what I'm saying? So it's very vulnerable to be there. But it's also exciting. You know what I'm saying? That was what's crazy about that is that show just happened to fall on release night, you know, which wasn't even planned. So, you know, that was just a real serendipitous moment. That was real cool that everything worked out that way. My life be cool like that sometimes, you know what I mean? Like the same day that the homie asked me to open up for his one of his first big tours, it's like the same day, you know, my project, my first project since 2021, kind of me brushing off the dust and getting ready to be back outside, put the foot on the gas, and show people everything I've been working on for the past few years, that they would just coincide. You know, that was cool. That was real dope. So just as vulnerable as I was, it was very exciting.
I don't know if I should say this or not, but I was supposed to go to the Arm & Hammer show the same night. And
hey, yo, and there was a Zach Fox show the same night. You know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
You know, to be honest, we share a lot of the same fans. So, like, there was even people hitting me up. Like, you know, mostly my people was, like, in Philly. You know what I mean? Like, just saying, like, yo, tonight's crazy because I got to choose between you, Armand Hammer, or Zach Fox. You know what I mean? So everybody who showed up and was like, I chose you, I felt deeply honored by that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I told Max on a side show, like, I was like, yeah, that's love. You know what I'm saying? Because you had two other Johns where you would have been hypnotized as well. You know what I'm saying? So I hope we did a good job of, like, giving y'all some good energy and, like, everybody had a good time and enjoyed the music.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
I don't regret my decision at all.
Oh, that's what's up. I love to hear that.
Yeah. So the night we met you at Silk City, it was a little bit before Maxo took the stage. And I remember you saying something like, please don't miss his set because you're about to see some real artist shit.
Yes.
And I've thought about that, and you're right. And I've thought about that since, and I would put you in the same category, from the way you perform on stage to the music videos you make to the music you've created. It's all there. Real artist shit that's unique and in its own lane. Like you say in Odyssey, just a little abstract, but you get the picture.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So when you think about your career and your artistry, what has informed it over the years and contributed to the growth listeners feel and hear in your work?
I think just mostly the journey I explained in a lot of the, or like a few of the questions before this. But I think also a mind state that the folks who raised me gave me, definitely musically, was just that it's not about fitting into a box. Like, you can come from a certain box, but you don't have to stay in that box forever. And I feel like what true artists do is, they might have been cut from a certain cloth or come out of a certain, let's say, quote unquote, box. But they weren't afraid to expand that box and possibly make it a circle or just destroy the shape all together and just, you know, bring it to wherever they wanted to bring it. I feel like that's something that was deeply ingrained in me by the musicians I was raised around and by the musicians I grew up listening to. You know, shout out to somebody we gonna get into soon, Method Man. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, so many things that are familiar, but just you hearing it in some way you ain't never heard before, and then it never went back. You know what I'm saying? It just took it somewhere new and never looked back. I mean, I love that. You know, that's what I'm all about. And that's what I hope to leave behind as a legacy. And that's something I'm proud that I've attracted when it comes to a lot of my peers. Maxo is one of them for sure. You know what I'm saying? Also, Sasha, like, shout out. Like, they killed it. I'm most close with Maxo out of everybody on the set list. And, you know, just seeing him grow. And, you know, if you go back and listen to his first projects and then tap into seeing where he is now, he is a perfect example of that same thing I just explained. Like, just, you know, I actually just watched the interview he did recently with Cinema Psy. He does this podcast series called Real Talk.
Yeah.
It's to people about music and movies. And he brought up how, you know, Maxo has just been growing so much and bringing his music new places. And Maxo said something that I thought was real, you know, true to what we're talking about right now. He was just like, I don't want y'all to expect where I'm going next. Like, that's not the point. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not necessarily the point of you soaking in my art and getting to know me, because what I'm really trying to do, these are what he said, the words that he said, I'm trying to show the complexities of being a human, and in particular for him being a Black man. You know, there's so much, he said this one thing that stuck with me too. He's like, there's so much noise up here talking about his head. And it goes in all different kinds of directions, and I'm interested in exploring all those directions. And that resonated with me, because that's exactly how I feel.
I love that. I feel like this is the perfect segue to talking about Method Man and Takao.
Get it.
What's that shit, nigga? They be smoking. All of them sick. Niggas ain't fit to walk a mile in the dead man's kit. I make them shit about the pack or bricks to shut. He ain't nothing but the number. Unknown John Doe that wanna flow. Here it is, coming up shit's creep. I come to throw monkey witches in your program sleep. And I'ma grow like a rash on your nasty ass. And a whip with no brakes, and I'm hitting the gas. It's a bird, it's a plane, take a look in the sky. Method Man on some shit, niggas call me to fly. Cause my style comes back to hopping turnstiles. Pay your fear, if you're goody in the chair, you can bet out. Get severe on the double, I harass it. I don't look for trouble, I'm already trouble. Your bastards at the wicked flows that I crafted. I'm another deadly venom style to be mastered by a psychopathic. Way beyond an average. Joe, where the hell if I flow? There you have it.
Important album for me. Very important.
Every episode, we ask our guests to pick an album for us to talk about in the second segment of the show. It can be a classic, personal favorite, something that's been influential. And so tonight we're talking about Method Man. We're talking about his debut, solo debut album, Takao.
Takao.
So as you were saying, this is a project that has been especially influential on you. You said it continues to be influential. Tell us about that. What has been influential about it?
Oh, my Lord. I think everything. I got introduced to it as a young teenager. It's one of those ones where, like, Method Man, I obviously, like, you know, grew up in the 90s, early 2000s. So, you know, Method Man was, he's been there for a good breadth of that journey. And he was always like a figure I knew about, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like I got real, truly into him and was able to appreciate what he was doing as a 15-year-old. It's when I decided to actually go back. And, you know, I always thought he was dope. Like, as a youngin', I loved his music. I loved everything he was doing with Redman. I loved all the music videos, just how entertaining they were. I remember even watching the old tour videos of him on that big tour with Jay-Z and all them back in the late 90s. You know, the one where him and Redman, like, it was like flying from the ceiling and on wires and shit, like, you know.
Yeah.
As a kid, like, you know, they was like superheroes to me when it came to the rap stuff. But, you know, as a kid, you don't fully understand what they talking about or what's going on. So I think when I was about 15 and I first really started getting on my, all right, let's go back type time and let me understand the history of this culture I'm so into and this style of music I'm so into. Let me learn some more stuff about this. These artists I say I like or think I like, let me actually go back and, like, you know, dig into their history and where they came from and see what they really talking about and see where they really coming from. I decided to do that with Method Man, and you know, I was just hypnotized. I was just fully amazed again. you know, already being amazed as a youngin, but just like fully amazed again once I really tapped in and tried to understand where he was coming from and where he started at. And so I was like, let me go to his first album, To Cal. And immediately just the imagery of the album cover took me, you know, so epic, dark, smoky, you know, just seemed like he was coming out of the dungeon or the graveyard with just full magic and alchemy, you know what I mean? Like just on some dark wizard shit. And then, you know, the opening track, once I played it, oh, there is nothing that will replace that memory for me. It was just a whole new world for me. You know, because I was more tapped in with the later stuff, the stuff that was coming out like late 90s, early 2000s when I was a youngin. But then when I went back and listened to his first album, which came out in 94, and I heard that RZA beat, you know, the dun, 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 you know, and then he just come in talking his shit, and then he just says real ghosty, like, what's that shit that they be smoking? And then he just like, T'Cal. And I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like, this is like an old, I just feel like it's one of them old Kung Fu movies. And like the dark warlord is coming out of the dungeon to just like destroy anybody in his path right now. But it was also like, he was just fully embracing that. Like, he wasn't even shy. Like, it was just like, he's like, yeah, this just me though. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is who I am. I fully embrace it. And it was just epic to me. Like, that was probably the first thing that caught me. Like, that opening beat and really looking at that album cover and just feeling like it was so dark and epic and just hardcore. And then when he come in and he just talking about, you know, just being like a dusty pothead, really, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's kind of where I was at that time. Like, I was just a young boy, you know what I'm saying, with my friends, just kind of like a grimy little pothead, just wandering the streets with my friends, getting into bullshit. And like that album, especially that first track, just was that entire feeling for me. Like, I just fully related to it. And I think from there, just listening to the rest of the tracks, it was like, I'm listening to him and I'm like, yo, this man is like, I just thought it was so dope that a rapper could just like kind of embrace being this kind of like dusty working class kind of figure and not be shy about admitting that, but beyond that, make it sound fucking epic. You know what I'm saying? Like, that just really empowered me. Like, I was just like, you know, because I ain't grow up with a bunch of money or like being able to afford all the fly shit and like having jewels and all that. So it was like, that was me. I was walking around a lot of days. I'm in my dusty, scuffed up ass, grimy looking shit. I'm smoking weed just to feel good and catch a vibe. And you know what I'm saying? But my life still felt epic. You know what I mean? But like the era I grew up in was that bling bling era where it's like, you need jewels, you need cars, you need a big mansion, you need all the flies, video vixen girls on you. And that just wasn't my reality. So having somebody talk about just kind of being like grimy, like just this grimy, dusty figure, but making it sound so epic and just fully embracing that just really validated me as a youngin. And that's what made me first fall in love with that.
Mm. Yeah, I appreciate all that perspective. One of the things that has stood out to me as you've been talking is just how Meth kind of being himself was an inspiration on its own, you know. And he's such a unique MC, you know. He's like witty and unpredictable and funny and serious somehow all at the same time. It's like, such a unique artist.
Yeah, that's actually what was so cool too. Like, once I really was just sitting and listening, letting the lyrics soak in and letting his delivery most of all soak in, that's what really blew my mind open, was just his delivery was so unorthodox and just so out there that it just opened my mind to whole new ways of approaching rap and music, because at that point I had already been delving into trying to rap and write rhymes and express myself that way for a few years. And I think a lot of the early examples I was following was more like straightforward, you know what I'm saying? Like I grew up in that punchline era where you got like a real easy to understand flow, and to be the dopest rapper, you just had to have really dope punchlines and just deliver it confidently. It started getting boring to me like real quick. And what I appreciated so much about first listening to Cal was just the crazy unorthodox ways he was just approaching it. Like, it was just like he had no bounds. Like, it was just almost drunken master flow. You know what I'm saying? I feel like when it comes to Wu-Tang, a lot of people give it up to ODB when it comes to like maybe that drunken master, like unorthodox wild flow. But if you really tap in and go back and listen to Cal and anybody who just already like familiar with the album, you know how crazy Meth was getting with them flows and the different things he was doing with his voice, just how smoky and grimy he could get, but then how wild and flamboyant he could also get with his voice, like just them different ranges and just not being afraid to approach such crazy styles of production. That just like deeply influenced me, like just blew my mind open, straight up.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever really looked at this album as like this declaration of Method Man, but it is, you're right. Like, it's like, this is who I am, take it or leave it. And now that I'm like thinking about him and his career, like particularly as an MC, like there always was like this sense of freedom that was associated with Method Man, you know, like just sort of this idea that
I heard that and I heard freedom, like just somebody just like, I'm me, I'm this, I'm grimy, I'm raw, I get fucking high, like that shit is fun, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I find it was just like he was just finding the beauty in the grime, and I was just like, that's what I needed at that time in my life, and that's what deeply inspired me going forward.
Everything you said about the album cover is spot on too. Like you can hear, you can see this, and then you can hear it in the music. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he's just like appearing out of a cloud of smoke, you know, and that's like how exactly, that's exactly how the style comes across too. It's just like this wild, unorthodox, grimy, smoky, dark, dusty style just comes out of nowhere and just being fucking epic. Like, that shit is just too ill. Like, I'll play the album when I'm fucking 80. Lord, I'm 90, 100. Lord willing, I'll make it that old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that shit is just too crazy to me. I love it. I love everything RZA was doing. You know, RZA, he a scientist. You know what I mean? He go crazy with his explorations of sound. I mean, everybody know RZA like a crazy nerd kind of hood scientist with it, but just somebody being so unafraid to like match that energy and just go crazy.
Yeah.
Really inspiring, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you used the word crazy. I listened to the album this week and I couldn't get past Sub Crazy, the track Sub Crazy.
That joint was wild.
Check it out, y'all, check it out. We can all get by if we won't now. Get a fat piece of the pie if we want. Motherfuckers getting mad high when they want now. I will survive, recognize to beat the cat. What up, op niggas is strapped, ready for war on the L block. Things just ain't peace no more, fuck it. If you ain't with me, then forget me. Niggas tried to stick me, retaliation, no hesitation, shifty. Creeping niggas in the dark, triggers with no heart, ripping ass apart. I be swimming with the sharks now. Stay out my water or it's manslaughter. Kid, your order start reaching for that nickel-plated order. Matic, my thoughts get sporadic. Loaded raps, busted mad shacks to your addicts. They say this has it, this flow's a hazard. Straight from Hazard County with the bounty on his head. And it's set, wanted dead or alive. I swear by the whites of their eyes to never take a dive, I will survive. We can all get by if we won't now. Get a fat piece of the pie if we want. Motherfuckers getting mad high when they want now. I will survive, recognize and beat the cow.
because I remember like being a kid and listening to that, and like nobody I knew was sort of was into that track, and I think it had something to do with the fact that it didn't have any drums on it, like, and that was not something you heard all the time in 1994.
Oh, actually, that's a good point. Like, shout out Meth, yo. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and just shout out Wu-Tang in general. But like, for me, Meth was like. Also, I recognized that too. Like, I was just like, yo, he just be getting off. Like, it ain't even got to be no drums. It was just like, he just getting off on these crazy loops and samples too. I was just like, that is dope. You know what I mean? Because early 2000s hip hop, late 90s, like, it's a bunch of heavy drums, hard drums, you know, the drums and the beat is like, you know, kind of the core of that sound. And, just going back, listening to that, and just hearing somebody just get off over some loops that necessarily don't have, like, some heavy hitting drums as, like, the main focus. I was like, this is crazy. You know what I mean? Like, this is art, you know?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It really inspired me in that way, too. Yeah. Big up you for even noticing that, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it just struck me as, like, really ahead of its time. You know, like, something that could be made today, and folks would still be into it.
That song also, them lyrics used to get to me. That John's like, we can all get by if we want now. Get a fat piece of the pie if we want. You know, just that same energy. Like, he's like fully embracing, like, you know, I may not be, you know, the most crazy, like, cleanest, fly, flashy baller, but it's like, we can all get to it.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. We can all make our stake, and we can all make our claim and just be powerful regardless. Like, I love that song too. That's one of my joints on there for sure. That's one of my favorite songs on there.
I want to go back to the ODB comparison. It's funny that you're saying that, because you're right. Like, both of them are like, have similarities. I don't know. I'm just appreciative of everything you're saying, because I don't know that I've like considered these perspectives before. But they are very similar. Both of them are crazy on the mic, but they make me laugh so much. Like, Meth says some wild ass shit, and so did ODB. And it's just, it's funny shit, but they're both so good at what they do, right? Like, ODB was so good, even though people were kind of like, what's going on here? And I think Meth the Man is a little bit the same in that way.
Yeah, and you know what's also cool about them is just, I'm all the Wu-Tang dudes, you know, but Method Man, and of course, like, we won't even get into like Ghostface and Ray. Like, you know, they metaphors and they poetry was crazy. But you know, I just think with the unorthodox kind of drunken master style, like I said before, like, just the way they were spitting their poetry was just crazy to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, even back on Sub Crazy, like, what Meth say? He creeping niggas in the dark, triggers with no heart, ripping ass apart. I'll be swimming with the sharks. Stay out my water or it's manslaughter. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. that ain't some straightforward bars right there. That's like
right.
Some real metaphoric poetry that you kind of got to like sit there and think about. But then on top of that, he just like swinging on the beat. Like, he not just coming with some straightforward, like, easy to understand, this fits on a 4/4 BPM drum tempo type of style. Like, he's swinging and way, like, I'm swaying with it. You know what I mean? Like, it was just real wavy. And like, the way he was just coming up with his metaphors, like, you know, it's just,
yeah, it's a whole technique. I think he could really be studied for that.
Mm-hmm. Yo, I study him. Bro, shit. That shit is inspiring, like, to this day. You know, I feel like he's even a little bit more straightforward nowadays than he was back then.
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
Sometimes I hear his new tracks, no diss, Matthew, you one of the GOATs, in my opinion, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like he's even more straightforward than he was back then. Like, sometimes I be wanting to hear him get off, like, on some Takao shit, like, yo.
Like, let loose a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like, he's going crazy, bro, like, fuck what the style is, or like what the trend is right now. Like, just get off, man. Just paint. Throw some paint on the canvas and just go crazy.
Yeah.
I listened to Mr. Sandman before we started, before I got on the call with E tonight. And first time I'd heard it in a long time. And immediately I thought, I bet this was supposed to be a Gravedigger song. That beat sounds like it was made for Gravediggers.
That's interesting. I ain't get into the Gravediggers till way after I got into Wu-Tang and Method Man. I could definitely see that comparison though, because Gravediggers, I appreciate them for the same reasons I appreciate, you know, albums like Tikal and like ODB stuff, and you know, shit, we can even get into the Black Moon, Smith and Wesson, Boot Camp Click type of stuff, you know, just that real dark, grimy, you know, it's grimy and dark, but it's like these dudes are speaking straight jewels and gems and poetry that like empowers you through life almost, you know what I'm saying? Like even with the dark stuff they embracing, it's like, this just where we from and what we going through, but we going to embrace it and, you know what I'm saying, just master our style and get through it
and yeah,
be, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It could definitely be a Gravediggers type joint, you know what I'm saying? Did Tikal come before that or was it after?
They both dropped in 94. I'm not sure which one came out first.
Yeah, maybe. And was RZA involved in Gravediggers?
Oh
yeah. Facts.
Yeah, although he didn't actually, now that I'm thinking about, Prince Paul did a lot of the production on the first Gravediggers album, so
yeah,
maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't a Gravediggers beat.
Maybe it was, you know, shared influence. Maybe, right, you know, maybe it was though. You know, I dig that comparison though. That's spot on. Like I could see that.
Do you think this album is underrated? Do you think Tikal's underrated? I feel like it gets overlooked in favor of other Wu-Tang solo debuts like Cuban Links and Liquid Swords.
Oh yeah. Yes, 100%. I think it even gets overshined by like Method Man's latest stuff and all his endeavors with Redman later on. Mm. Like How High, you know, How High was just, it's a cult classic. And I feel like that's maybe the peak of like they fame in that era.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where they just became like these iconic figures for the early 2000s kids, at least, you know. Mm-hmm. Redman and Method Man was definitely iconic in the 90s. Like, you know, everybody knew them.
There was
a reason, you know, Method Man was chosen as the first artist to, you know, do a solo out of the whole Wu-Tang clique. They've spoken about that themselves in interviews. So I'm not denying that you know, they wasn't already lit, but I think the later stuff even overshadows that. Mm. And yeah, anybody tapping in, I invite you to, if you haven't yet, like, just go back to that era where they was first jumping outside and putting their mark on the world. Yeah, I think it's very magical. I think it's very epic. I think it will be deeply inspiring to anybody who likes that old grimy shit. You know what I'm saying? Even the kids who like that new type of grimy shit, like,
yeah,
there's stuff in there for the kids who went into that drill shit or that new trap shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you really into some like dark, epic sounding shit, like, you know, check that out. You know, I think it'll open your mind up in a new way for real. Like, it's very deeply poetic on top of just being, you know, just abstract, of course. But like, if you cut through that, you know, it might not be as easy to understand as, you know, some straightforward kind of trap drums or like a drill beat. But, you know, I think there's a lot of gems to dig into. There's a lot of really creative poetry to dig into. I think the imagery is so raw. I think it's very organic and homegrown. It wasn't trying too hard. It was just making that grimy shit just like, you know, just that everyday grimy shit, just making that epic, like movie quality almost, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think that, like we talked about this album being underrated, do you think Method Man, when you think about like everybody in the Wu-Tang Clan and who people are always talking about, do you think he's not mentioned enough? Like when we're concerned, I'll say this, like in association with Wu-Tang, because Method Man like sort of ventured out and he's his own entity now. But like, yeah, I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like whenever people talk about Wu-Tang, like Method Man's not always one of the top few people that are mentioned.
It's always Ghost and Ray. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so, and I feel like he should be at the very top of the list.
Yeah, I feel that. I don't know, because I got that inherent bias just from being kind of from where he was always that dude, you know. And I've always viewed him as one of the most famous and mentioned in Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Ghost and Ray. But, like, you know, there's so many dudes in Wu-Tang, Capadonna, Inspector Deck, Master Killer, you know what I'm saying? Shaheem, even, like, loosely affiliated. Method Man is up there and getting mentioned. I feel like that's almost a better question for one of the youngest. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm about to be 34, so I would be more interested in hearing what, like, how a younger 20-something or teenager who's getting into Wu-Tang or is already into Wu-Tang feels about it. Like, I'm actually curious about that myself. He was always just one of the top dudes.
Yeah.
You were checking for him, though.
Yeah, definitely. But, and ask any of my old heads, you know, that was just the dude. So, like, I got put onto him without checking for him. You know? I just got put onto him and fell in love.
Yeah. This is making me want to host a listening party with, like, teenagers. Yeah, you know, like,
my brain was spinning after you said that. Like, oh, how can we
and, like,
that
recording
happen?
It. Yeah. That would be really
good. That would be interesting. You know what I'm saying?
It would be.
Like, I wonder how they view it, you know? I feel like at the end of the day, most of everybody who's into Wu-Tang, I feel like the top dudes is Ghost Ray, Meth, ODB, and RZA. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like them the top guys for everybody.
Yeah.
And then once you get a little past that, people who know what's up is like, you know, GZA. You know what I'm saying? You know, shout out GZA the Genius. I should have mentioned him right before when I was like naming dudes who less famous, but you know, GZA was, you know, just from me doing the knowledge and doing the history, like, GZA was like that dude before any of the Wu-Tang dudes was them dudes. Like, GZA was the one who was on before everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Had like a deal first.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most known in their hood for rapping first. You know what I'm saying? And anybody who really fuck with Wu-Tang know Liquid Swords is just, that's one of them ones.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
That's just one of the ones that's mentioned forever when it comes to Wu-Tang. But even him, I feel like GZA don't get even mentioned as much as Method Man and the other guys. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Like, everybody loves Liquid Swords, but they don't bring up GZA when they talk about, like...
No.
Yeah, like, I feel like I hear GZA name less than a lot of guys. You know, Capadonna, he a beast too. I feel like he don't get mentioned enough. Like, you know, of course, Wu-Tang fans they're gonna know everybody and Capadonna up there, but you know, Master Killer up there, Inspector Deck, he one of the raws too, to a lot of people. Punchlines especially. Mm-hmm. But you know, I feel like them guys is really Meth, Ghost and Ray, ODB and RZA. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll say this and then we can start to wrap up, but you mentioned the videos. And man, the All I Need video, I just remember being a kid and being like, where do I get white contact lenses? Like, this is so crazy.
Yo, Meth with the white contact, that was him in the element. I watched some interviews with him where he was like, I was just doing that shit just to look crazy and just being all shit.
Yeah.
And
them Grand Hills that he had was running in. Clean.
Yo, I mean, to be real, like, when it come to, like, you know, y'all was asking about stuff that inspired where I'm at now and things like Starter Pack and just different imagery like that, like, it's them videos. Like, those is my best points to this day. Like, it's really nothing flyer than that. Like, nothing doper than Meth in the All I Need video or the Bring the Pain video, you know. Nothing is doper than them type of fits to me, and just like how that stuff looked, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just everything on film got that grainy, raw quality to it.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to movies, like, I'm just that type of dude. It's like, I just think shit on 16 millimeter film just look way better than all this new HD type of stuff. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
To me, a lot of this HD type of stuff, it almost looks too real sometimes. Like, it takes away the cinematic quality of it. I feel like sometimes it's so crispy and so clear. I feel like I'm watching a play and I'm not watching a movie. I feel like I'm just like looking at somebody act in real life. And that becomes less epic than a movie like Pulp Fiction or something. You know what I'm saying? Or like a movie like Desperado or, you know, just want to, or like New Jersey Drive or Clockers. Like part of what brings that cinematic quality to my eye, I feel like it's just the inherent grain and textures that all the film and analog equipment they was using back then brought to the, just brought to the visual, you know? Like that should just look cinematic. That's like what cinema looks like to me. Maybe, you know, that's probably a bias because I grew up in that era where that's all they had at the time to make cinema. You know, film and VHS shit and stuff like that, you know? I grew up watching a lot of skate videos too. So like, you know, just that grimy kind of like handheld VHS quality, like that stuff always just looked the coolest to me. Sometimes I feel like stuff can be so clean now, it loses its epicness to me. It's like this too clean. Yeah. With a grime and a grit.
Right.
You know?
Well, Logie, thank you for making time for us and thank you for getting me to listen to Cal again this week. I've actually really enjoyed that. Starter Pack is the EP. It's out right now, produced entirely by Alexander Spitt.
Go get your starter pack today.
That's right. Is there anything you want folks to know about things coming up for you or how to stay in touch?
Staying in touch, L-O-J-I-I. Just look that up on everything. L-O-J-I-I. Pun intended, this new EP entitled Starter Pack is me just getting started. I've been outside forever. I say that on the beginning of the first track. I feel like I've been outside forever, but I'm just getting started though. That is my motto right now. Cause I really been outside for a long time, but I am just getting started. In my mind, I'm going for best new artist. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm going for best new artist and I have a lot of things in store. I've been making a lot of stuff that has not been released yet over the years, and I'm looking for the best ways to give them to everybody. So just tap in, go listen to Starter Pack, get your starter pack today. Hopefully it's a motivation for your hustle and you know, a reminder to never give up on your dreams no matter how long you've been chasing them, and expect a lot more from me soon. Hey, Alexander Spitt, he dropping beat tapes. He got a new beat tape basement shit out right now. He got projects with multiple artists, including Sideshow, who was, you know, the artist who performed after me at that last show y'all attended.
Yeah.
So go find all of that, man. Straight up.
Well, thank you again. Appreciate it. This has been great. Enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise. And hit me anytime, y'all. Let's tap in.
I appreciate that.
Straight up.
All right. This has been The Next Movement, folks. Thanks for listening.
Peace. I'm talking about back in the day. Acid washing in the winter fade. Starter jacket straight from East Bay. If you had money, you had to match your J's. Just getting back to my way. Just getting back on the page. Feeling like I'm stuck in my way. Till it's up, up and away. Up, up and away. Up, up and away. Till it's up, up and away. Up, up and away. Up, up and away. I'm from the era a starter jacket was worth your life. I'm from the era a starter jacket was worth. I'm from the era a starter jacket was worth your life. It was dangerous to walk around with some matching flights. Popular amongst the street hustlers working nights. Long nights, making sure nobody short the price. It was on site, never for no likes. Hand-to-hand transactions, not with your device. We was throwing dice, survivor corner fights. Outside before the internet was every shorty's vice. Running in my starter jacket like a rite of passage. To this day I wear them drawers, I got on a classic. Trying to ball like Bubba Chuck back when he said I gave this game my life. We talk about practice. Why you mad? Why take away my joy? You make me have to mask my sadness. Grew up with the wolves who got labeled as savages.
People love playing with you till you're doing bad. Till I really get them mad and have them going out the saddest. And crack a smile and roll some up while I'm laughing.